All right, now fluid shifts. We've already discussed edema. We've defined edema. So edema is simply a movement of water into the interstitial space. Now, if it comes, what's the major, if it's moving into the interstitial space, where is it really moving from? Where are we getting that water that's moving into the interstitial space? Okay, so we're getting it from the blood, from the plasma. So when we get edema, we actually have less fluid in our arteries, which can come to a strange, which can happen, which can lead us to a strange place where we have excess fluid in the body, but not enough in the artery, in the arterial system. All right, now movement between the extracellular and intracellular fluid. If we have a water deficit, which is increased extracellular fluid, so water is moved from the cells into the interstitial space. This would cause a water deficit. It's associated with symptoms that result from cell shrinkage as water is passed, as water is pulled into the vascular system. Now, this is what we talk about when we talk about the classic dehydration. As a person becomes dehydrated, their blood volume goes down. As the blood volume goes down, your body has a more difficult time delivering oxygen. So what does it want to do? It wants more water. Now, the best way for you to get that more water is to? Well, to drink it. But if you don't drink it, then it will begin to steal it from your cells. So as it begins to steal water from your cells, what do those cells do? They shrink. And this is where we get the classic dehydration type signs and symptoms. So there's confusion, there's irritability. That comes because your brain cells are beginning to shrink up a little bit and your nervous cells. You get fatigue because the muscle cells are beginning to shrink. Water excess is the opposite. Now we've got excess intracellular fluid, and that's being stolen from the extracellular fluid, from your blood. And this is usually going to develop from gain or retention of excess water. And what are those three causes for that excess water? Liver failure, kidney failure, heart failure. You guys are going to know that. Actually, I guess you already do, but we're going to keep it in your head. So, all right, now, fluid spacing. First spacing is what's called normal. We have normal distribution of water between the different compartments. Then we have what's called second spacing, which is abnormal accumulation of interstitial fluid, better known as edema. Then we have something called third spacing. And third spacing is when you have fluid accumulating in parts of the body where it's not normally found. So this would be an example of that would be ascites, where you have a person has an excess of water in their peritoneal space. It's associated with liver failure or liver diseases. So this is third spacing, when you have water in pockets of the body that it really doesn't belong in those pockets. Say again?
Another example of the third
spacing. You can get it in the between the pleura, the lining of the pleura. You can get it in joints. But the major one there is really the ascites. All right, now, how do we regulate water? Well, what's the major kidney in charge of it? Major kidney? Did I say the major? What is the major kidney in charge of? Yeah. All right. The major organ is the kidney. Now, the kidney is controlled by le brain, as well as its own mechanisms. So, first we have the hypothalamus. The hypothalamus, in turn, tells the pituitary to secrete ADH. What is ADH? antidiuretic hormone, sometimes also known as arginine vasopressin. Now, arginine vasopressin, or ADH, antidiuretic hormone, does what? Okay, it changes the way that your kidney concentrates water. So the more your brain tells your pituitary to put out ADH, what's going to happen to our water? Are we going to lose more or gain more, retain more? We're going to retain more. So what the way the brain regulates is by telling the kidney produce more concentrated or less concentrated urine. And when the brain acts, it tells it to be more concentrated urine, which means hold on to water. If the brain doesn't say anything or doesn't say as much, then what does the kidney do? Less concentrated urine, lose water. So that's from the brain acting through the pituitary. Now, the hypothalamus also tells the pituitary to release a hormone, corticotropic hormone, that is going to affect the adrenal gland. The adrenal gland is going to produce something called, starts with an A, aldosterone. And aldosterone is going to tell the kidney to retain sodium. Retaining sodium is going to cause the body to retain water. Because remember, where does water go? Follows sodium. Lovesick little puppy that water is. Now, the kidney itself is going to regulate. It has its own agenda. And what's the kidney's agenda? How does it decide to regulate water? What's the number one thing that kidneys care about? They care about filtration. So it is going to do whatever possible to maintain its glomerular filtration rate. So if you remember way, way back when you took ANP, what's the functional unit of the kidney? The nephron. So we have an artery going in, we've got the glomerulus itself, and then we have a kidney, an artery coming out, right? And then this is called the Bowman's capsule, and that comes down to the collecting duct. And does that look familiar? Kind of. Very abstract art here. Now, what the kidney cares about is it cares about the flow and the pressure difference between the afferent and the efferent arteries. So what it's going to do is it's going to change blood pressure and retain more or less water to maintain its own glomerular filtration rate. So even though it's influenced by the brain, by the ADH, by the aldosterone, it has its own agenda, and that will also influence what it does. Now, when the kidney decides that there's not enough pressure, what does it do? How does it respond to that? Well, it does cause some vasoconstriction, but through a chemical. What does a kidney release? Say again. Okay, the kidney does not produce norepinephrine and epinephrine, but those are involved. Say it again. Say it like you mean it.
Renin.
Yes, renin or renin. So your kidneys will release a hormone called renin. Renin, in turn, converts angiotensinogen to angiotensin 1. Angiotensin 1 is converted by angiotensin-converting enzyme to angiotensin 2. Angiotensin 2 stimulates the release of epinephrine and norepinephrine, causes vasoconstriction, and stimulates the adrenal glands to produce aldosterone. So the kidneys have kind of ultimate control over the amount of water because they're the ones doing the work, but they also have this very powerful mechanism that can influence the brain. Then we have cardiac regulation. Yes.
Can you say like the kidneys have control over like how much water they're, but much water in dying?
Your kidneys can only filter so much. So that's water poisoning, where they have so much water that it becomes toxic and your body just can't get rid of that water that quickly.
Your body really can't do anything.
Right. Yeah, but I mean, you really have to drink a lot of water before that happens. The most common reason for that happening is actually drowning. Yeah.
Is that the same thing that you were saying? The water goes in the cells kind of expanding first when you drink water?
Yes. Yeah. That's what happens, but again, it takes a lot of water before that happens. So cardiac regulation. Your heart has to pump all that water that your kidneys are holding on to. Now, eventually, your heart says, you know what, this is just too much. I don't want to pump this much blood. So as the heart gets filled up with blood and the volume of blood increases, it will stretch the heart. The heart does not like to be stretched. Don't push me. That's what the heart says. So the way the heart says don't push me is it releases hormones. And those hormones are called natriuretic peptides. Natria for sodium, sodium Na, natria. Natriuretic, P, so pee out salt, pee out sodium. When you pee out sodium, you also pee out water. So your heart will regulate, will help to regulate water balance through its hormones. And what are those hormones called? Natriuretic peptides. Then we have gastrointestinal regulation. Your gut will absorb more or less water. What's the major part of the GI tract in charge of absorbing water? The large intestine. Now, let's imagine for a moment that we have a patient who's had colon cancer. How did we fix their colon cancer? We chopped out part of their colon, right? Now, they've got a shorter colon. Are they more at risk or less at risk for dehydration? They're more at risk because they can't absorb as much water as they used to be able to. Then we have something we call insensible water loss. At this exact moment, you are sweating. You don't know it, but very, very small amounts of sweat are being released and they're evaporating so quickly that you don't even know it. When you go to Vegas, because of the difference in humidity there, it's going to be even worse. Now, every time you breathe out, guess what you're doing? You're losing water. Now, we don't really notice it most of the time because we're not breathing into, like, you know, ever put a shirt over your mouth and you breathe into the shirt and then after a while you're like, this is disgusting. Like you go skiing and you have one of those little face masks and after about 15 minutes the face mask is completely drenched and it starts freezing. Yeah, that's fun. So you're losing water a little bit at a time all throughout the day, and you don't feel it, so we call it insensible.
People with like hyperhidrosis, do they have like cases of where their electrolytes are, you know, not balanced? Do they end up sweating?
Well, it depends what we mean by hyperhidrosis. There's people who just have excess sweating, or just sweat a lot. And that's not necessarily going to cause any problems. But there's some people who they really have inappropriate sweating to the point where they actually do lose electrolytes. But you know, every time you sweat, you also lose sodium. So you're losing sodium through the sweat glands as well as water. And actually, that's how your body creates sweat, is it pushes salt out, and then the water, it's like, I don't know. It's just crazy. All right, now here is a picture, because, again, some of us like pictures better. So we have the hypothalamus telling the scrotum, I mean the pituitary. So the hypothalamus can tell the posterior pituitary to secrete ADH. ADH affects the kidney. We have the hypothalamus telling the anterior pituitary to release corticotropic hormone, which tells the adrenal cortex to produce aldosterone, which affects the kidney. We have the kidney doing its own thing. The kidney releases renin. Renin helps epinephrine. Epinephrine increases renin release. renin will increase angiotensin 2, or angiotensin 1, which in turn will turn into angiotensin 2, which will release, tell the adrenal gland to produce aldosterone. Angiotensin 2 will also tell the adrenal glands to produce epinephrine. Whew. Meanwhile, the heart is going, hey, I'm stretching too much, and is releasing atrial and ventricular natriuretic peptides, known as ANP and BNP. And then the endothelium itself, the inner layer of the arteries, is also saying, hey, we're getting stretched too much, and releases its own natriuretic peptide called CNP. So we have ANP, BNP, CNP. So if you know the NP is natriuretic peptide, the A, B, and C is just where it comes from. Whew! Yeah, and this is a simple process, relatively speaking. All right, now let's talk about fluid status indicators. So how do we know whether a person has got enough volume or whether they're dehydrated? Well, we can look at their mucous membranes. So you can look at their lips, you can ask them to open their mouth, take a look at their mouth, you can take a look at their eyes. And what are we looking for? Not necessarily chapped.
Dry.
So are their mucous membranes moist or are they dry? So if they're dry, what would be happening if a person has dry mouth? Okay, could be dehydrated. Could be. What else? Give me some more. Okay, a drug that causes dryness. And what kind of drug would cause dry mouth? Ooh. Say again? Anti-inflammatory, not so much. But you're right with the anti part. Anti-what? Well, you should have stopped with the cholinergic, yes. Anticholinergics. So, what's in charge of producing saliva? What part of the nervous system? What controls it? Parasympathetic. So, the parasympathetic system ordinarily tells you, produce saliva. It's what makes your mouth water when you smell dinner. Now, if you're dehydrated, and you don't have enough blood volume to maintain blood pressure, what's the body going to do? It's going to stop doing parasympathetic stimulation and it's going to start doing sympathetic. So when someone gets really nervous, what do they get? Cotton mouth. It's like, it's just so dry. That's why public speakers need water. So nervous and they get dry mouth and they can't talk. So we can either have dehydration, we can have sympathetic or stress response, and we can also have drugs that inhibit the parasympathetic system, and we call those anticholinergics. So those are kind of the three big reasons why a person might have dry mucous membranes. Next one is we can take a look at turgor. What is turgor again? So we're looking at the skin elasticity. So you pinch the skin up and see whether it rebounds or whether it stays tented. Eyes would just be kind of dry. Eyes are a little bit less sensitive because there's so many other things that can affect it. You know, the amount of sleep a person's had, contact lenses, allergies, all of that. Now, turgor is a late sign. By the time a person's gotten to bad turgor, that's a really late sign. You don't want to wait that long, but it is something you want to test for. Blood. You can look at their hematocrit level. Now, what are the two major components of blood? Plasma and cells. Yeah, protein is a very small component of blood. So the major one is water and cells. Now, hematocrit is the percentage of blood that is blood cell versus water or plasma. So hematocrit is expressed in percent. Now, we can use hematocrit to tell us something about a person's red blood cell function, but we can also use it to tell us something about a person's hydration status. Because if a person is becoming dehydrated, are they going to have more cells or more water? They're going to have more cells. If someone is well hydrated, are they going to have more cells or more water? More water. So a high hematocrit level means the person has more blood cells than they do water. And that can be a sign of dehydration. Now, in the plasma, we can look at what we call BUN levels, which stands for blood, urea, nitrogen. Some people call it BUN. I don't, but that's just because, I don't know. BUN just sounds like Susie's pet in Calvin and Hobbes. You know, Susie Durkins, the little girl next door. Calvin has Hobbes and she has BUN. I don't know. It's just me. You need to be reading your Calvin and Hobbes as well. Question.
For the hematocrit levels, if you look at the percentage that we got, the 42 to 52, right? Mm-hmm. And how much higher would that be?
It doesn't always have to be that much higher, but if it's just on the high side or higher than normal, it's something that you're looking at, like, the whole picture. You don't want to look at any one thing. You want to look at multiple things to tell you. You know, because we don't have a lab value or a body switch that says, this person is dehydrated, this person is normal. What we have to do is we have to look at several different indicators and come up with the whole picture. Right. Now, BUN, if BUN is high, there's usually two reasons for that. One is kidney problems. Person is having kidney insufficiency. The other reason is dehydration. Nitrogen. So blood, urea, nitrogen. So if a person has high BUN levels, that's a possible sign that they are dehydrated. Now, urine. If a person is dehydrated, are they going to have more or less urine? Less urine. Now, is that urine going to be more or less concentrated? More. So what we can do is we can take a urinalysis and we can look at specific gravity. Specific gravity is a measure of concentration. So here is, between these two numbers, is our normal values, 1.003 versus 1.03. So as long as it's within that range, we consider it normal. If the urine is more concentrated, so that would be if they have higher than 1.03, that could be a sign that they are dehydrated. What else could it be a sign of? What's the major determinant of blood, of urine concentration? The brain through the, which side of the pituitary? The posterior, releasing what hormone? ADH. So something that's called syndrome of inappropriate ADH, or SIADH. Sometimes it's caused by a pituitary adenoma, which is it's a tumor on the pituitary that can cause various hormones to be released in higher amounts than usual. So the major determinant, though, is probably going to be dehydration, the major reason for the concentration. The other thing we can look at is just the amount of urine. What's normal urine output per hour? Per hour. 30 milliliters? Is it 30? So, something for us to look up for tomorrow, or maybe for later today. So, look up the normal urine amount per hour. Now, below normal is called oliguria, little urine. Olig means few, urea, urine. So the two things we can look at for urine is the specific gravity and just the raw amount of water that's coming out of them. And then we can also look at some of the electrolytes, so like sodium and potassium and all of that. Now, once we've looked at our patient and we've made our determination, there's basically three ways their body can be in terms of fluid. It can be normal, contracted or dehydrated, or expanded or excess. Now, in addition to that, the electrolytes can be off. Now, remember, sodium is the major determinant of tonicity. So when we talk about isotonic, hypertonic, or hypotonic, the major determinant is sodium. Now, there is an exception. There's actually two exceptions. What were the other two things that really influenced tonicity? We have sodium, and then we had... And then we had... What was our formula? 2 times sodium plus glucose divided by 18 plus BUN. So, when is glucose going to be so high that it starts becoming a big determinant? Diabetes. So, in uncontrolled diabetic patients, someone who's got a blood sugar of 400, normal's less than 100. If they've got a blood sugar of 300, 400, that can make it so that glucose becomes the determining factor in tonicity. What was the other one? What was the other lab value? Sodium, glucose, and BUN, or BUN. Now you're all going to say BUN. Now, what do we say increases BUN? Kidney failure. So those are some exceptions to when sodium might not be the most important. But generally speaking, for most people, sodium is the most important. So if we look at sodium itself, we can tell which one of these it's going to be.